hi, everybody. You've come to the radio show Beyond the Matrix for people who think outside the box of convention, and I appreciate you tuning in every other Saturday, listening in to some pretty controversial and exciting information. That's what I stand for, and it sure is what my guest stands for today. I've taken my time trying to get him on, and I finally got him. His name is Ian Crane. You know him, I'm sure. He's a former oil field executive and has become one of the UK's leading authorities in, deep geopolitics, social issues. He's a truther. The political disaster of our planet, the one world order in all its coloratura and all of its profoundness and effect on the human race. So I have not set any idea what I'm going to talk about with Ian because he just kind of runs with it. And I'm just really honored to be with him today and to bring him to you. We're going to talk about the One World Order. I want to get into Codex Alimentarius. He's very knowledgeable about that. And that, as you know, really gets up my nose. And so without further ado, hi, Ian. Thank you for coming on.
Hey, thanks for the invitation, Patricia. I really appreciate it.
It's great. I just want to let people know that the first time I came across you was in the film that we mutually were in, which was Patty Greer's film, 2012. We're already in it. And I only saw what you had to say after the film was out. And I said, I got to know this man. So at last, you're here.
Indeed. Gosh, that was that 4 years ago or 3 years ago that we recorded that?
I think it was about 3 years ago, as I recall.
Right, 2008. Okay, yep, I lose track of time. Things are moving at such a phenomenal rate.
And I'll tell you, and I think even then, if I recall, you spoke about the Codex situation, right?
I did. In fact, I've been speaking about Codex for certainly the last 5, possibly 6 years. And in fact, through 2006 and 2007, it was really my primary focus, because I could see this steam train coming down the tracks at a phenomenal rate of knots. And what was very apparent to me was that those who it was going to impact upon most, particularly the complementary and alternative health community, had no idea. Their heads were so far in the sand, they had no idea what was coming down and the fact that basically they were at great risk of losing their livelihoods.
Yeah, well, you know the story about the man who was burst into with automatic weapons. I think it was Southern California, Whole Earth Store. Do you know about that guy?
Absolutely, of course.
This is twice now that burst in, and I think they ended up putting him in jail. I'd like you to talk about that if you know more details, because I don't. I heard about it, and I just said it just defeats me quite so much to know that this is happening and people are still with their fingers inserted. So let's start by talking about that incident and then elaborate the latest bad news about the Codex in Europe and in the United States.
Okay, well, let's actually talk generics, because you know what we saw with that incident is going to effectively establish a pattern. But you know, to put it into perspective, people need to understand the basics. You know, the Codex Alimentarius agenda has been 50 years in the making. It is not something that's crept up on us, although the vast majority of people have still never heard of it. And of course, the term Codex Alimentarius doesn't exactly roll off the tongue. But what it translates to it directly is it is simply the food code, global food code. And the Codex Alimentarius agenda, let me maybe give some credence and say that initially, perhaps, although I'm open to debate the subject, you know, the motivation was perhaps you know, really quite sound. But once it became apparent to particularly the pharmaceutical industry, the potential of Codex Alimentarius, if they hijacked it, then you know, all of a sudden, you know, over the period of sort of 1961. Through to certainly the mid-90s, it was a case of the pharmaceutical industry and then the emerging biotech industry, of course, led by Monsanto, got together to realize their dream of effectively controlling people's well-being right across the planet. And that's why, you know, when I say that Codex Alimentarius is the UN agenda to totally eradicate all complementary and alternative healthcare, thereby leaving the field completely at the mercy of Big Pharma. And then on the other side of that is the biotech industry, which is to completely eradicate all natural farming. So, you know, the Codex Alimentarius agenda really is about making sickness absolutely compulsory, because their intent is to remove the individual's ability to maintain their physical body in top condition.
Where do you think we're... What steps can individuals take? Let's start with the fact that we have chemtrails attacking us. We have every kind of poisoning. We're going to have to talk about the radiation and how that ain't no accident. And now this. And just I'd like you to... like us to talk about positive things that people can do to take care now, to prepare themselves as best as possible to be able to continue to at best possible take care of themselves.
Well, no, but let's look at that. If people only focus on themselves, which I completely understand, you know, the motivation to do that, obviously. But if people only focus on what they can do for themselves, then they are by definition condemning future generations to lives of abject misery. You know, it is absolutely critical that people actually take the opportunity to look at the bigger picture here, because it's not the existing generation, if you like, that's really going to feel the full brunt of this attack on humanity, which is what it is. It's not this generation, it's the coming generations. Because, you know, what we're doing is that we're creating a world the future generations are going to be born into, and they're not going to know any different. So they're going to be born into a world where all food is processed, it's devoid of minerals, of vitamins, of nutrition, where people get sick, very sick, and are reliant on the pharmaceutical industry for even being able to maintain the physical vehicle in the physical realm. So all of the basics that our generation has taken for granted in the past, i.e. the opportunity to decide whether we want to eat the prepackaged stuff from the supermarket or go down to our local organic farm and buy our foodstuffs from the local organic farm. In Europe right now, we don't even have the opportunity anymore, really, to decide that we want to take natural health products as preventative measures against becoming ill, because the Codex Alimentarius agenda was implemented in Europe, or half of the agenda was implemented in Europe, on May the 1st of this year, when a piece of legislation came onto the statute books, which has the wonderful acronym of THUMPT. And this is the Traditional Herbal Medicines Products Directive. Now, this directive effectively makes all natural health products, including Chinese medicines, Vedic medicines, Amazonian medicines, it effectively makes them illegal. And this is, and you know, well, on May the 1st of this year, the pharmaceutical industry was cracking open the bottles of champagne right across the planet, because they'd achieved this objective in Europe of effectively banning all natural health products. And the way that the Codex Alimentarius agenda works is, because it works under the auspices of the World Trade and World Health Organizations, the next stage is to go for harmonization. Don't you love that word? Harmonization. And so what they will be doing is they will be pushing this legislation into the other trade blocks. Now they've succeeded in the EU, now they'll be pushing it elsewhere. And the target for natural health products was Europe, and the target for natural farming was the US. And I mean, right now, natural farming in the US is pretty much non-existent. In fact, the Organic Farming Association in the US have effectively acknowledged that they've had to give up the fight trying to retain any degree of organic animal feed because it just doesn't exist. The entire alfalfa crop in the US, which is obviously the basis of animal feed, is now contaminated, GM contaminated. And even in the US, I mean, even for organic foods, organic food in the US can have contamination of up to 10%, which is absolutely, of course, outrageous.
Wow. So why is it that there are still stores that are selling whole biological foods and there are still herb stores in Europe that have not shut down? What's the deal?
Okay, well, there's two things going on here. First of all, there is effectively a moratorium on the legislation for 2 years, which means that existing health food stores and herbal stores and herbalists can shift their existing stock over the next two-year period. But after that, then basically, you know, it will be technically illegal to sell. I mean, it's technically illegal to import the stuff into Europe now. But they've got 2 years to sell anything that's already in Europe, and then after 2 years, in theory, if not in practice, it'll be illegal to sell it. Now, the other factor is what you will see is in a lot of the health food stores, and this is the case with one of the major chains in the UK, which is called Holland & Barrett. And people look along the shelves, and what they see along the shelves is, for example, they'll see St. John's wort. And of course, the reaction is, well, you know, what's all this about natural products not being available? You know, I can see it quite clearly here. It says St. John's wort. Yes, it does say St. John's wort in big print on the label. But when you actually get close up to it and you look at the label with a little more scrutiny, what you see in microscopic print underneath the St. John's wort, in brackets, it says equivalent.
Wow.
And this is what is happening. This is the deception, effectively, that's being played out. And the National Association of Health Food Stores in Europe sold out in the UK. The only group in the English-speaking community, anyway, was the Irish Association of Health Food Stores, who, under the leadership of one of their MEPs, Cathy Sinnott, actually fought in Brussels to try and prevent this legislation coming onto the statute books. But their British counterparts, the National Association of Health Food Stores in the UK, they capitulated a long time ago because the pharmaceutical representatives made a campaign to go around all the stores and demonstrate to the store owners how much more margin they would be able to make by selling the synthesized products versus the natural products.
That is just so it is beyond diabolical that this is happening and that most people in the world still don't understand what's going on. And it's the frog in the pot syndrome that nobody gets it until we're boiling and cooked.
Exactly.
That this situation exists. I was just on a flight out of the Azores, and I was talking to a couple of Americans who were incensed that I would even suggest that such a thing existed. And they said, you know, no offense, Patricia, but it sounds like kind of new age stuff. And I said, this is lit law. This is written. This is agenda. It's available for you to read it. Wake up. Read this information.
You know, Patricia, I'm going over. I've been invited to go over to New Zealand in November. And there's two bills that are basically on the table in New Zealand at the moment. One will be addressing the availability of herbs, and that's going to come under the Health Regulation Bill. And the other one is the food safety bill. Now, you know, a big part of food safety, you see, it sounds good. It sounds good. And the average citizen is going to say, yeah, well, that's just my government looking to take care of me.
But yeah, you've got that right.
Yeah, really. Take care of you. Yeah, not in the sense that people would believe.
That's right.
But the purpose, basically, the food safety bill will effectively prevent people from growing and consuming their own food.
I know. I have run across some of this information in the past, and again, I get a lot of guffaws from my bringing up the idea that it will soon be illegal to grow your own food. And this is already starting to appear in some states. I think in Washington, yep, there have been a couple of cases.
Absolutely. And this is what we're starting to see in the US now. And this is the sort of thing that we're seeing. I mean, we're seeing the attacks on the raw milk production, particularly of the Amish farmers in and around Pennsylvania. I think it's illegal to transport raw milk across state boundaries in the US. And in some states, it is illegal to sell raw milk.
Why is that? What are they going about the milk? Do you have any information about...
Oh, yeah, because if it's not pasteurized, how can it be safe, you see?
Right, I mean, but what's really behind it? What have they got? What are they afraid of with the raw milk?
Look, what they're afraid of, it's not just the raw milk. I mean, the raw milk is just the thin end of the wedge. What they're trying to shut down is they're trying to stop people effectively being able to manage their own well-being by eating natural and good quality foods.
But my question is, do you know anything specifically about why they're going after, in such a big way, going after raw milk?
No, it's just the thin end of the wedge.
Okay.
It's just the thin end of the wedge. I mean, basically, listen, in 1994, the US government were going to go after vitamins and mineral supplements in the US. And it was actually down to Whole Food Stores, which has subsequently been bought out. But back then, when Whole Food Stores was an independent chain in the US, and Whole Food, the management and the leadership of Whole Food Stores mobilized their customers to hit the streets in cities all around the US and got their senators to basically introduce a piece of legislation which established a ring fence around their natural vitamins, supplements, herbal products, and organic foods. But basically, over the last 17 years, I mean, this has been, you know, eroded. And now, of course, what's happened is exactly like you said, it's the boiling frog. It's little by little, little by little, you know, right, using existing legislation. I mean, one of the things that many subdivisions in the U.S. have is they have in their local agreements that people can't grow vegetables in their front garden.
That's just outrageous. It makes me insane.
Oh, I know. But I mean, when I lived in the US in the mid-90s, I had the same thing. On my subdivision, the terms and conditions of the title deed of the property was that my front garden had to be laid to lawn. Nothing else, just to lawn. And anybody who tries, for a lot of people, you know, they have really small back gardens, but they have quite an expanse of lawn at the front. And over, as price of foods have risen quite dramatically over the past couple of years, and I think the price of food is going to rise very dramatically in the coming months because we've had a horrendous growing season right across the planet. And of course, people have been trying to preempt this by growing food on their front lawn. And then you have what's called the neighborhood police. You know, driving around the subdivisions and basically telling people that they've got to dig up their vegetable plots and lay it back to lawn.
But they can't plant in their backyards either, right?
Well, in some cases, they don't have much of a backyard to plant, which is why they're planting in the front yard.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, listen, it's part, you know, people are going to see this attack in different ways, you know, because basically, in Europe, for example, the German government has been one of the prime movers to resisting the introduction of GM crops in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the reasons why Germany was attacked with the, you know, the biowarfare E. coli in May of this year. Because Germany has 5.4% of its arable land, and Germany has a very significant percentage of its land turned over to arable farming, and 5.4% of its arable land is certified as 100% organic.
Wow. But how long can it stay organic, knowing that the GM produce and the GM plants are going to infect it regardless?
Well, that's why, you know, basically this is why it's so outrageous that, you know, GM is allowed anywhere in Europe, but it, you know, and it's allowed in on the basis of tests. But, and of course, everybody knows that basically once GM gets a hold, it's virulent. I mean, we've only got to look at the situation in the US. I mean, Monsanto were buying up arable farmland all the way down the west coast of Canada and the US, because they knew very well that the prevailing winds blew from west to east. And so by planting the genetically modified crop in the west, it would contaminate the farmlands to the east. And of course, the classic case here is the wonderful fight put up by Percy Schmeiser in Canada, where Monsanto had planted to the west of his land. They came along and said, could they do a test on his land, because they just wanted to establish whether or not any of the GM seeds had blown across onto his land. And he said, for sure, yeah, come and check it out, because I certainly don't want your GM seeds on my land. Well, they discovered that there were GM seeds that had blown across onto his land. So then they tried to sue him for illegally growing their GM crops.
You're not serious.
Oh, I'm serious. I mean, look, Patricia, as you've heard me speak, you know that when I speak, I always say, don't take anything I say at face value. You know, that's not the purpose of my presentations by any stretch of the imagination. I sow the seeds, no pun intended, I sow the seeds and encourage people to actually go and look at these things for themselves. Yes, because it is so outrageous. It's so outrageous. It's only when people investigate it for themselves and they realize that, you know, what I've shared, like this example, is based on truth. It's fact.
Yes, I feel the same way. And as much as I'm into a lot of esoteric information, I do my very best to constantly present the scientific, the documentation, so that people can be rooted in truth as it is being presented to the human race.
Absolutely. Well, and even with esoterica, I mean, I don't appreciate we don't want to go there right now, but even with esoterica, you know, our challenge is to try and provide people with the tools so that right. The esoterica becomes experiential.
Exactly.
You know, and it's the same really what we're doing here, which is saying, look, don't take anything we say, because until you see it for yourself, then it's only then that it becomes your truth.
Right. Well, like I said, I was sitting with these people on the airplane and I wrote it down and said, please investigate this. If you care about your own health and the health of your children and the environment of the planet, you need to have an opinion about something so absolutely globally devastating to the well-being of every living being on this. Nothing escapes it. Nobody talks about what it means to the animals.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like this is not just happening to human beings. It's through all the species.
Well, let's have a look at the work of Arpad Putzai. I mean, and tragically, Arpad is suffering. He had a stroke a couple of years ago, a massive stroke. But Arpad Putzai was the food scientist working at the Rowett Institute in Scotland. He'd been there for 30 years. And his specialist area through the late 80s and 90s was genetically modified foods. And initially, when he started to do the research in the late 80s and early 90s, he accepts and acknowledges that he was an advocate. He thought that, you know, the genetic modification of plants and our foods, you know, could solve world hunger. But as time wore on, as his research got deeper and deeper, he eventually came to the conclusion that there was absolutely no way that genetically modified foods should be permitted to enter into the food chain. And he went on record. In fact, he appeared in a BBC documentary in 1998. Now, this documentary was broadcast in October of 1998. And in that documentary, he makes the observations. He says that, you know, he had seen the terrible damage that genetically modified foods had done to the laboratory rats, particularly in terms of the damage to the stomach linings, and particularly in terms of their ability to absorb the nutrition from the food. And so he stated categorically in this program that, in his opinion, as one of the world's leading authorities in food science, that there was no way genetically modified food should be permitted into the food chain. Well, Monsanto heard about this program. Monsanto called Bill Clinton. This is a matter of public record, by the way. Monsanto called Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton called Tony Blair, who at the time was the Prime Minister of the UK. Tony Blair called the head of the Rowett Institute. And the following morning, Arpad Putzai was fired.
Yeah.
You know, he went, as he says himself, he went from being revered as the world's one of the world's leading authorities in food science and food safety to being, you know, demonized and marginalized and kicked out of his position at the Roe Institute. You know, this is the power. This is the power that organizations such as Monsanto have. Let me share with you, Patricia, something you may or may not be aware of. When Paul Bremner foisted the Iraqi constitution on the fledgling Iraqi government in 2005, the constitution was initially it was worded as 100 military orders, but it's been changed to 100 articles, civilian articles now. But Article 81 specifically prohibits Iraqi farmers from saving their seeds.
Wow.
So here we've got a crazy situation, because what we've got here is literally the cradle of civilization, you know, where all of the ancient texts tell us that this is where humanity learned the arts of arable and animal husbandry. And here we are today, some 6,000 years later or so, where the Iraqi farmers are told that they cannot save their seeds. They have to buy their seeds from, you guessed it, Monsanto. And people say, well, how do they enforce this? How could they ever enforce this? Well, Monsanto has a contract with a company called Shea, which is spelled XE. Now, vast majority of people will not have heard of this company, Shea. But Shea was formerly known as Blackwater.
Oh, there you go. Bingo.
So Monsanto have effectively got a private mercenary army to manage the proliferation of the GM crops in Iraq. And the effect that this has on the farmers, let's take a look at what's happened with the BT cotton farmers in India. Because, you know, India has been buying the BT cotton from Monsanto for 17 years now. And Monsanto insisted that, you know, all the cotton farmers, they ditched all of the natural cotton seeds and they bought into Monsanto's BT cotton, which has the Terminator gene. And what was happening year after year, the crop was either not yielding at all or poor yield. And unlike normal suppliers, you know, if you get a duff product, you either get a refund or you get a replacement. Not with Monsanto. It's just a case of, you know, I'm afraid that's just tough. You've got to come up with the money to buy another set of seeds. And Monsanto's seeds don't just come as seeds. You know, you've then got to buy a whole bunch of herbicides and pesticides and other stuff to be able to germinate the seeds anyway. But in India, the farmers were borrowing more and more money. And in this particular part of India, the legislation there states that if you die of natural causes, the debt that you have created passes on to your family. If, on the other hand, you commit suicide, then the debt dies with you. So over the last 17 years, hundreds of thousands of Indian cotton farmers have committed suicide. In fact, I was reading a report that was published by a New York State University earlier this year. And in that report, now this is a New York State University, this is no conspiracy site. And in this report, it states that one Indian cotton farmer commits suicide every 30 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Now, I was giving this presentation. When I gave this presentation about Codex Alimentarius, I think it was 2006 or maybe early 2007. And during the course of the presentation, I made the observation. I said tens of thousands of Indian cotton farmers have committed suicide over the last decade. And the lady stood up at the back and she said, "Let me correct you. Let me correct you, sir. This lady," I later discovered, "was a lady called Vandana Shiva, who I'm sure you've heard of." And she said, "Ian, it is not tens of thousands. It is hundreds of thousands, and it is getting worse." And I mean, this is we need to look at this, because, you know, this is again the thin end of the wedge. Monsanto, it was Henry Kissinger who said, you know, control the money, you control the world, control the oil, you control nations, control the food, you control the people. And this is Monsanto's objective, to control the global food supply.
Is it also, do you think, part of the agenda to depopulate the planet?
Well, absolutely, because, I mean, obviously, if you're controlling the food supply, you control who eats and who doesn't.
And also how sick they get and how quickly they burn out.
Well, exactly. I mean, obviously, you know, the food in the US right now is barely, you know, better than cardboard. In fact, one might argue that cardboard has more nutrition than some of the food in the US. And of course, people get sick. And then you've got the pharmaceutical industry in the US, which, of course, there's no such thing as a free market where the pharmaceutical industry is concerned in the US. That's why their border guards, particularly along the Mexico border in the south, are more concerned about. I mean, if you're over 60 and you try and walk or drive across the border from Mexico to the US, you'll be searched. They're not looking for drugs. That in the way that people think, they're not looking for cocaine or anything like that. They're looking for pharmaceutical drugs because they're concerned that people go across to Mexico to buy the pharmaceutical drugs where they're a lot cheaper than the US. And this is how the pharmaceutical industry in the US protects its monopoly on its outrageous pricing. And of course, if you can effectively destroy the quality of the food that people are eating, then you can pretty much guarantee they're going to get sick, which of course then, you know, boosts the market for the pharmaceuticals. And the pharmaceutical industry has a very, very simplistic business model. And that is that every human life form, from the moment of conception to the moment of death, is a potential revenue stream. And the sooner they can get you on the track, the better they like it.
Yeah, in fact, we do see a complicity to get the children on drugs, and they're now getting... They're giving kids at 3 years old antidepressants, and of course we know that there are programs in the works where they're forcing the parents to give the kids drugs, or they take their children away from them, and we know of women, I know of stories where people have gone to jail because they refuse to comply.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the US right now, I think there's 26 vaccinations that are required before the child can go to school, and in most states in the US, they cannot get into the state school system unless they can prove they've had the vaccinations. And as you rightly say, I mean, drugs like Ritalin are being foisted on kids at a ridiculously young age. And of course, Ritalin is an SSRI. I mean, it is a psychoactive drug. And in fact, you know, once again, encouraging people to look at their own research. If people go to any search engine, but Google in particular. And if you just Google SSRI database, I mean, SSRI stands for selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Ostensibly, it's an antidepressant. But if they Google SSRI database, and they will find a massive database there which lists all of the homicides and suicides and self-harming that is all directly related to the use of these drugs.
Wow. And to think that your three-year-old child is... The schools have the right now and the power to tell the parent that they recommend for this syndrome that we don't even know if it exists. I don't think it exists.
ADHD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no proof that there is such a syndrome. They just every day they come up with a new syndrome without any proof at all of it. It's got a fancy name. They slap it on the child. And of course, you know, who wouldn't be bored and uncomfortable, not to mention nutritional lack. These kids are in these rooms. They're watching 7 million images flash across their little brains all day long. And then they go sit in a room and it's like, A is for apple. And of course they're acting out.
Well, but hey, Patricia, what we've also got to take into account is the fact of what stimulates this kind of ADHD behavior, even if it does exist. And of course, I agree with you. It's a creation of the DSM, which of course is the psychologist's manual written with a great deal of help from the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah.
Yeah, follow the money. But I mean, let's take a look at aspartame, you know, because aspartame is one of the primary contributors to what is termed ADHD. So, I mean, a very quick history, of course, for those who aren't familiar, is the guy who introduced aspartame into the food chain is none other than Donald Rumsfeld.
That's right.
And of course, Donald Rumsfeld was head of Searle. He was chief executive officer in the early 80s. when Aspartame was being or attempting to be foisted into the U.S. food chain. But the head of the Food and Drug Administration at the time basically recognized it for what it is, i.e. it's a biowarfare product, and refused to sanction it. So Rumsfeld supported Reagan's campaign for the presidency. And the moment that Reagan was sworn in on the White House lawn in January of 83, Rumsfeld reminded him of the support that he'd given him and demanded that he change the head of the FDA, which Reagan did. And by May of 83, aspartame was in the food chain. Now, yeah, I mean, aspartame ostensibly is the feces of E. coli.
You're joking. I didn't know that.
There you go. That's primarily what it is. So, and of course, it's an artificial sweetener, and
I heard it was a rat poison originally.
It was used as a rat poison, indeed. Absolutely. Yeah. But it certainly wasn't in the food chain. Now, you go to any store in the US selling drinks marketed at young kids. It actually, you know, I mean, diet, even the diet drinks, the Diet Coke and Diet This, Diet That.
They're
loaded with aspartame. Or yeah. Some people call it aspartame, but, you know, aspartame as we call it in Europe. And but the drinks, you know, the fruit drinks that are targeted specifically at preschoolers are loaded with this stuff. And you know, the manufacturers of these drinks, Patricia, they were starting to realize that parents were latching on to the link between aspartame and the behavior of their children. And so parents were picking up the bottles. And they were looking at the ingredients, and, you know, they could see aspartame was sort of often the second or third ingredient on the top line. So then the drinks manufacturers got smart, because what they did was they replaced the aspartame on the top line and put sugar. And when the parent sees sugar, they think, oh, okay, it's got sugar in, therefore it's not going to have any artificial sweeteners. But what the manufacturers are doing is they're slipping in the aspartame, and instead of being on the top line, it's on the bottom line. And of course, it's in microscopic print anyway. So a kid, you know, a young child that is basically given these drinks day in, day out with this aspartame is effectively not going to be their true self. I mean, these are, over time, these are psychoactive drugs that impact on the behavior.
Toxic poisons to the system on all levels.
Exactly, exactly. And
yet, is drinking Diet Coke like the big liter size straight out of the bottle.
Oh, God, you know. I mean, the thing is that, you know, we just don't know the full effects of this, because obviously there's not a lot of research being done on it, because any negative research that does find its way out into the public domain is quickly shut down.
Yeah, look at Michael J. Fox. It really looks like that's what happened to him. He was a Diet Coke addict.
Yep.
And he refuses to listen to people like us suggesting that that might be the problem. And he's still drinking it to this day.
Well, you know, I mean, and it's a tragedy, because, you know, quite often when people do start to suffer, seriously suffer from the negative effects on these things, they will actually try and find out what causes it. I mean, some people will just go down the pharmaceutical route and they'll take whatever drugs are offered to them. And, you know, at the end of the day, they're just a revenue stream to the pharmaceutical industry for the rest of their lives. But, you know, for those people who actually take a pace back and say, hang on a second, you know, what is it that I'm putting into my body that's causing my body to manifest these symptoms? And, you know, it doesn't really matter what the condition is. We all know that there are many, many cases where people have been able to rectify whatever condition it is that's afflicting them. They've been able to rectify that by changing the intake of stuff that they put into their body.
Yes, indeed. All right. So we've got 8 minutes left, because we've got a short time span this day. So I'd like to ask you, since people who have not been aware of Codex will start to investigate it, although it's a subject that I talk about a lot, and aspartame is another one. But some people who are listening are going to be thinking, oh, my God, it's so all-consuming. What's the hope? What can we do? And so in these next few minutes, how can people positively affect change with all of this hell that's coming down with what you've discussed today?
Okay, the important thing is that, as we said earlier, that people actually take responsibility for their own knowledge. You know, the role of the mainstream media, whether it's TV, newspapers, magazines, whatever, the role of the media is to control the narrative. And controlling the narrative generally means, you know, working on behalf of the consumerist, materialist agenda, because that's how publications get their advertising revenues in. So, you know, they're going to be pumping articles that support their advertisers. But we've got to encourage people not to take everything that they see, hear, or read at face value. You know, take responsibility for themselves. And then, you know, as you build up that knowledge and your information expands, then you start to get into a realm where you can say, well, hang on a second, I actually know enough to make a difference here. I know enough to be able to change what I and my family are eating or drinking. And then actually, you know, when we see other people doing that, you know, well, that impacts on us. So we can actually, if we change our lifestyle, we don't have to preach about this stuff necessarily. But if we get it right for ourselves and people can see that, you know, we're enjoying life because we're in good health and, you know, we're not regaling people with tales about our medical conditions, they might actually start to take an interest and do something positive for themselves. But it is all about taking responsibility. I mean, we've only touched on, you know, the Codex Alimentarius agenda. We haven't even got into the financial issues. I mean, here we are in Europe with the euro on the brink of total collapse. You know, Patricia, as you know, I was touring Ireland and the UK 18 months ago, basically stating that this was inevitable. This was being planned. It's not rocket science. You know, we're not harbingers of doom. We simply read the scripts, do the research, we present solutions, and those individuals who came along to our financial presentations at any time in the last 4 or 5 years, they're the ones, if they took our advice, they're the ones with a grin from ear to ear, because, you know, they've done exactly the right thing and they're not really affected by this. It's those people who have just sort of followed whatever it is they're told in the mainstream media, left their money in the banks to rot or collapse in value, and unfortunately, they're going to pay the price. Listen, at the end of the day, Patricia, you know, we are at a critical juncture in history, and this potentially is the most exciting time in our evolutionary process since the days of Atlantis. But we've got to get off our butts and actually participate.
Yeah, I agree completely. I love your dynamic, and I agree, and I'm telling people, as you are, now is the time to understand that we are returning to the community mentality, where we really get the fact that it's all for one, one for all, and we must pool, starting with things like growing your own food and pooling with your neighbors, even if we have to do it in the dark of the night because it's not allowed.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I'm sitting here on a piece of land where I've got amazing fruit trees. My neighbor's got tomatoes, and we're doing this on a small scale. And this is where we're headed, and that is very exciting, because as difficult as it seems on the big picture, the idea that we are returning to community is very exciting for this passage for humankind.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
I heard today that Hungary has banned GM crops now.
Fantastic.
So we also need to keep the pressure up on our politicians. And with that, I want to say that most of us don't believe anymore that that there's any way you can affect these people, but I don't agree with that. I think the pressure has to keep on non-stop. And when you hear about a country like Hungary yanking GM, then you know that you still have a voice to make change by these goons that are the governments of countries.
Absolutely. Oh, no, listen, you know, I absolutely concur with you. We have to keep the pressure on the politicians, but we also have to, you know, take responsibility and do the other stuff, because if we rely on the politicians, we ain't going to make any progress whatsoever. Most of the politicians go into politics with the best of intentions, but they Right. soon get caught up in the system, and they soon get told the facts of life, and unfortunately, eventually they become ineffectual.
Yeah, the unhappy conversation of once you're in the seat, we're going to have a little chatty poo, and out goes any semblance of altruism and true intent to help the people.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I'm really sad to say that the time is up with Ian, but you will come back, won't you, Ian?
I'd love to, Patricia.
All right. Listen, folks, you've been listening to the wonderful Ian Crane. His website is ianrcrane.co.uk. He's got amazing material for you. He's got a collection of videos, DVDs that he sells. You want to hear what this man has to say in the big picture. He is a true fighter for planet Earth and for humankind. And I really invite you to investigate what he has to say. Support him. Get your assets moving and take more and more steps to share the information within your communities, because that's what we've got to work with, folks. And that is what's going to work. This is Patricia Corey. I'm signing out. I regret that the time is so short. I'll be back in 2 weeks. And thank you again, Ian. Get out there, grow your food, and help heal the imbalance that's being perpetrated on this planet. This is Patricia Corey thanking you for daring to think outside the box of convention. And you keep soaring out there with the eagles. And remember, the truth is there. Seek it out. Thank you. This is Patricia signing out. Nah, 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 nah. I'll catch you in 2 weeks.